All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to be talking about the release of Ryan Schrader. We're going to be breaking down the contracts of incoming free agents Jamon Brown and James Carpenter as well.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years at FalFans.com, on Twitter at FalFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to be spending, you know, the majority of this episode talking about Ryan Schrader, maybe eulogizing isn't the right word to talk about, but in terms of looking back at Ryan Schrader's career and looking back at sort of the impact of the Falcons cutting him. And you know, he deserves it. And as we'll get into later in the episode, he definitely deserves, 15 to 20 minutes of a conversation about him, given what he has contributed, what he's accomplished in his NFL career. So, officially today on Wednesday, as the league year kicked off and free agency officially kicked off at 4 o'clock, the Falcons announced that they were cutting Ryan Schrader with a post June 1 designation. I won't spend too much time explaining what that exactly means, but basically what it means is the Falcons will take less dead money cap hit this year. They'll take in the sort of, to balance that out, they'll take more of a dead money cap hit in 2020 rather than the zero that they would take if they had just cut him in a quote unquote regular fashion. You know, he becomes immediately a free agent. However, the drawback to that is that the Falcons will not reap those cap savings until June 2nd of this year. And that's what's missed with this post June 1 designation is people will say, oh yeah, the Falcons, save more money. You know, the difference is they will wind up saving $6.4 million against their 2019 salary cap by making him a post June 1 cut designation. Versus, I think, like the 3.9, 3.95 that they would have if they had made him a quote unquote regular cut. But the drawback is that $6.4 million does not have any, they do not reap those savings until June 2nd of this year. Basically, as far as the cap purposes treat him, Ryan Schrader is still on the Falcons roster. Although, again, because he is being cut, he is free to sign with somebody else. But as far as the cap treats this, until June 2nd, he is basically treated as if he's still on the team. With Ryan Schrader, as I said at the top of the show, had an outstanding career, 6 seasons in Atlanta as an undrafted free agent out of Valdosta State. Came from very humble beginnings, didn't play high school football, sort of had a growth spurt during his senior year. I think he grew like 6 inches or something like that. Was like graduated at 6'4". I think he played some basketball in high school, if I'm not mistaken. If you're living in rural Kansas and you're 6'4", I'm sure many people are out there trying to make you play basketball. He wound up walking on to a community college in Kansas as a football player, immediately became their starting left tackle, given his athleticism, given his size, and then wound up transferring the following year to Valdosta State, started 2 years there, I think, at left tackle before becoming an undrafted free agent, made the Falcons roster as an undrafted free agent, wound up starting the final 4 games that season after the Falcons eventually grew tired of Jeremy Trueblood, then wound up starting 10 games the following season in 2014 after injuries to Sam Baker and Lamar Holmes sort of pushed him into the lineup, played well again in both of those seasons when he had the opportunity, and then became the full-time starter starting in 2015. I certainly had my skepticism of Ryan Schrader at various points during those first couple of years when he was here in Atlanta. I remember watching a highlight clip of him when we've signed him as an undrafted free agent. As you know, I typically try to stay away from highlight clips, but with undrafted free agents, I feel like it's acceptable to at least get an idea of what a player is. And I remember being like, oh, this guy's got, he's got some juice. This guy could be talented. And I remember that first preseason, that first summer, I think that was one of the first summers where I put up daily training camp content on FileFans.com in that 2013 year. And I remember he got a lot of hype based off of what he was doing in practice and what everybody who was at practices were saying about him. And then I remember watching him in the preseason games and being like, he's not as good as the hype has been building him up to be. I was really eagerly anticipating him coming out and being this dominant player. And he was fine. Like, again, relative to sort of where he came from, I thought he was fine. But I do remember at a certain point that season, probably around the bye week, where, you know, it was very clear that the Falcons season was pretty much over and Jeremy Trueblood had no business continuing to be the starting right tackle. I remember writing on FalFans.com, like, the Falcons need to start getting Ryan Schrader involved in the lineup because we know this Trueblood thing isn't going to work out, and let's kick the tires on this young fella, you know, and see what he can do. And eventually the Falcons wound up doing that. It took them, like, basically another, like, 6 weeks, I think, after that point when I started writing about it. I remember numerous weeks in a row being like, they're still not playing Ryan Schrader. I don't get why the Falcons are, you know me, complaining about the Falcons is what I love to do. I've been doing it for many years. And then in 2014, he had the really solid season, but then sort of having some question marks going into 2015, whether he could do it full time and wondering how he would fit in the outside zone scheme and seeing some things during that summer that we'll probably touch upon in a little bit. That made me a little hesitant to buy in, but then he wound up playing great in that 2015 season, was arguably the best offensive lineman on the team in 2016. I know Alex Mack usually gets that title, but I think you can make an argument that Ryan Schrader was better than Alex Mack that season. And then had another solid 2017, you know, had a little slight dip in terms of his run blocking, which again we'll touch upon a little bit deeper in a moment. And then we saw this past year, 2018, and as you guys who have been listening to this podcast regularly over the last 6 months have heard me say many, many times, basically since I think week one, I feel like Ryan Schrader played most of the season injured, and that led to sort of his downfall. But sort of now sort of being able to look back in hindsight and look back at the breadth of his entire career, you know, I do feel like there were maybe some clues that indicated that maybe injuries were going to wind up sapping him a little bit sooner rather than later and led to his quote-unquote demise, his rapid demise this past season. And we'll touch upon some of, you know, my theories and my speculation as far as that in a little bit. But I do want to let you guys know that you guys got to check out the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. I know free agency is going strong in the NFL, but don't skimp out on what's going on in the NBA, where you can find a daily Locked On podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that on whatever platform you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So talking about Ryan Schrader and really dialing in on sort of his injury history, and I think one of the benefits of being able to watch film is you pick up on things that most fans and most writers and most analysts that don't regularly watch film pick up on things. And there's certain things in the past couple of years that I can sort of look at now and be like, maybe that was a clue to something that maybe that was more meaningful than at the time I thought it was. And in looking back at Ryan Schrader's history and sort of him, you know, quote unquote, falling off of a cliff this past season, and it seeming like, you know, the idea that it was due to an undisclosed injury seems, it is very speculative, but also seems maybe a little bit of a stretch in some people's eyes. But I go back and I remember in that 2015 season, you know, most people remember the infamous Miami Dolphin preseason game where James Stone got destroyed by Earl Mitchell in that game. But what people don't remember about that game is Ryan Schrader also really played poorly in that game. Derek Shelby really took him to task in that game. I think it was probably the number one reason why the Falcons wound up signing Derek Shelby the following offseason, because they're like, oh, let's get that guy. I remember watching that game wondering and thinking, seeing Ryan Schrader limp on a couple of plays and thinking, oh, he's injured. And I remember that same summer, the Falcons were sort of sniffing around Jake Long prior to training camp and then wound up signing him after week one. And in my eyes, I thought a lot of that was due to, again, my skepticism on how he would fit in the outside zone scheme in Schrader. And also, if there was a legitimate injury, that there was a chance that the Falcons had signed Jake Long with the idea that, you know, they'll give Schrader a couple of games to see if he fits and then, you know, pull the plug on him and go with Jake Long for the remainder of that season. At least that was my theory behind it. And obviously, you know, I'm sure other people have other theories. And so, because, you know, I think if they were just looking for depth, they found that in, who was it, Tyler Palumbis, whoever they wound up signing that year. And then, of course, Schrader went out and played great that season. So whatever question marks I had after that Miami Dolphins preseason game and going into, you know, the first couple of weeks of the season surrounding Jake Long, completely went out the window when he wound up being one of the better right tackles in the league during that season. And then, you know, you fast forward to 2017, and he had the concussion early in the season against the Packers and then missed a game or two and then came back. But one of the things I remember coming off of, you know, it wasn't necessarily the concussion that was the injury that concerned me, but I remember watching him play that throughout 2017 and being like, his pass protection's still the same Ryan Schrader that we've come to know and love over the last couple of years as one of the premier right tackles in the league, but his run blocking isn't great. And sort of now looking back at it in hindsight, sort of fast forwarding to my thoughts on 2018, where my speculation here is that, you know, he was dealing with a lower leg injury, whether it was an ankle, a knee. I think it was probably more likely to be a knee or a hip or something, but I suspect maybe even a back or whatever, but some type of injury that led to him struggling against speed rushers and particularly as well as his run blocking. But I feel like some of the symptoms, some of the clues were there in 2017 with his run blocking falling off, because if you imagine sort of if you're dealing with, you know, leg injuries or whatnot, that's going to affect your ability to move. And that the run blocking is probably going to be the thing that falls off the quickest because of so much of the scheme is reliant on sort of the outside zone and movement in the zone blocking scheme. And so like now I can sort of look back at all of these sort of clues and think, okay, like, the reason why it just suddenly seemed to come out of nowhere, this injury that I'm, again, speculating that, you know, wound up sapping Ryan Schrader this past season, led to his struggles throughout the season, is that because it's kind of cumulative. And one of the things I've talked about numerous times on this podcast in relation to Roddy White in discussing Julio Jones' potential and future and longevity in Atlanta is sort of the cumulative effect of injuries and the fact that the human body just doesn't simply heal as well, you know, the older you get. And particularly with football players, you see this time and time again where injuries that a player was able to gut through earlier in their career when they're 27, 28 or whatever, wind up costing them multiple games when they're 30, 31. And I feel like, again, speculation, I feel like that maybe have been a situation with Ryan Schrader where if that 2015 injury that he had, you know, that I thought he might have had, he was able to gut through it, and maybe it sort of compounded a little bit in 2017, and he was able to still make it through that last year. But then in 2018, you know, all of those things sort of caught up with him. And I just remember that now, thinking back to, because I remember getting into, you know, debates with people, you know, many years ago back when Schrader was in his prime, and discussing, you know, sort of what Schrader's longevity would be. And I remember people saying, like, oh, because he hasn't played a lot of football and it hasn't taken the wear and tear that most other people would have had they played, you know, peewee football or high school football or a lot of, you know, big time college football, that he would be able to last longer than, say, the typical offensive lineman past age 30, 31, which, as you guys have seen with Falcons history, with guys like Blaylock and Claybo and now Ryan Schrader, typically the Falcons offensive linemen don't make it past age 30, 31. Here, you know, obviously there's exceptions to that with guys like Chester and Mack and Levitre and whatnot, and Todd McClure, of course. But, you know, and so I remember getting into arguments and debates with this, and people were saying, like, oh, Schrader will be able to last longer because, you know, he hasn't taken the wear and tear. And I'm like, you know, in my eyes, it's like, well, you know, the body just doesn't heal that quickly at age 30, 31 or whatever, as it would at 27, 28. And so it doesn't matter if he hasn't taken the same wear and tear at 22, you know, if he gets hurt at age 30, you know, he's not going to heal faster or whatever the case may be. At least that was the theory I had then. So, you know, it's always interesting to me and sort of looking back at Ryan Schrader's career. And again, going back to what I said earlier, I do think he should be appreciated. And we'll sit here, we'll never know, you know, unless Schrader comes out and says it, or the team comes out and says it, which the team is not going to do that, or somebody else comes out and says it, you know, that's in the know, he can be like, yeah, he was dealing with, you know, a knee injury or whatever. So, you know, we'll never know, and I'll probably never be able to confirm that speculation. But I really do think people should appreciate Ryan Schrader because, again, what he was able to accomplish given sort of those humble beginnings, I think is really outstanding and astounding, you know, given that there was probably a portion during that 2016 season, particularly that portion of the season when Lane Johnson was suspended, and you could make the argument he was the best right tackle in the league, and he was better than many left tackles in the league, a large percentage of left tackles in the league. And to do that, I think people should appreciate that, because, you know, one of the things that bothers me a lot is that, you know, when the Falcons cut a player or whatever, people will, you know, come out on Twitter or wherever and be like, yeah, you know, that guy did some great things. And then immediately, sort of out of sight, out of mind, I remember this with Robert Alford specifically, you know, I'm a big Robert Alford stan. But I remember, like, you know, the Tuesday or whenever it was that he got cut, people were like, yeah, man, I really loved this great moment from Robert Alford in the Super Bowl and all these various things that he did. And then 2 days later, I guess it was, when he signed with Arizona, people were like, haha, I can't wait for Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley to torch him. And it's like, wait, I thought you said that you liked Robert Alford. And so, like, that sort of that attitude that fans tend to have, you know, where basically if a player's not on your team, he might as well be dead to you. And we see that constantly with players that the Falcons move on from. You know, I have the opposite. I tend to be more endeared to players once they leave Atlanta than they necessarily were when they were in Atlanta. You know, hashtag Team James Stone for life. You know, so I do want to make that note about Ryan Schrader and say that, you know, he did really a great job here in Atlanta, and nothing could take that away. And we'll see if the Falcons can adequately replace him. I think the fact that Schrader was able to step in shortly after the departure and end of Tyson Klebo's time here in Atlanta, obviously we got those years of Holmes and True Blood and whatnot, rather than a full season of Schrader. But the fact that he basically came in and really saved the Falcons' skin in that regard, I think should not also be, you know, forgotten and whatnot. And there's no guarantee that the Falcons will, you know, Ty Sambrello or somebody else that the Falcons add this offseason is going to do something similar. Hopefully that will be the case. But as you guys know, I constantly talk about the value of the right tackle position. You know, it's not treated the same way as left tackle, but you can make an argument from at least a football standpoint, not necessarily a financial standpoint, but a football standpoint, that a right tackle is just as valuable as a left tackle in this league, given the quality of pass rushers that, you know, make their home on the left side of the defensive line, many of whom the Falcons will be playing in the next couple of years, including J.J. Watt, including Von Miller, Michael Bennett, Danielle Hunter, Cameron Jordan. Who am I forgetting? You know, like, so possibly Nick Bosa. So, you know, you got your work cut out for you if you're a right tackle in this league. And so it's not for the faint of heart. And that's part of the reason why I'm a little bit more skeptical than others of whether Ty Sambrello can handle those roles. But we'll have to see. And, you know, we'll wrap things up in a moment talking about sort of the Javon Brown and James Carpenter contracts. And we'll also talk a little bit about Tevin Coleman, his departure in Atlanta. Although I do, again, in the case of Tevin Coleman, I do feel like he deserves, you know, at least half an episode. So I won't go too deep on that. Know that more of that is coming. But, you know, before we get there, I do want to remind you guys to check out the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, where you can get daily updates on all the comings and goings across the league in this free agent week. And you can find the Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So we got the details of the Jamon Brown and James Carpenter contracts. They're basically 2-year deals. They're, you know, the guarantees in year two basically make it very, very unlikely that the Falcons are going to cut either players next offseason. So it's different than the Fusco deal. So, you know, it'll be interesting to sort of see how both of these guys play, since they're presumably going to be locked in as the starting left guard and right guard this season. You know, I know Dan Quinn's going to talk about competing, but you don't make this sort of financial commitment to either one of these guys if you're planning on them being backups. Barring injury, barring, you know, the Falcons are basically going to have their thumb on the scales to get both of these guys in the starting lineup by week one. And, you know, I don't want to make it sound like neither of these guys are capable of starting. I just don't have high opinions of their capability to start. Like, if I was putting them on a 10-point scale, I'd probably say, like, at best, they're like 5.5s. You know, slightly above average. But, you know, maybe they'll be better. I'll watch more tape of both of them and maybe come away a little bit more positive. But, you know, I think they're mostly average guards. But dealing with their contracts, basically it was Carpenter got about sort of what I thought he would get on his four-year deal. 4 years worth $21 million, but it's basically a two-year $9.5 million deal because the $9.5 is the guaranteed money his cap hits. This year is about $2.9 million, and next year is about $4.9 million. And so the Falcons will, you know, presumably have him start the next two seasons at left guard, based off of that money. I mean, his contract is low enough that he could be a backup at, you know, at $4.9 million next year if he doesn't have a great season in 2019. But given his lack of versatility, you know, he played the tackle in college, but you're not going to play center or anything like that. So, we'll see about that. I was a little surprised to see Jermon Brown get more money. Jermon Brown's deal is a 3-year, I think, 18-point-something million-dollar deal, 18.75 or something. But it's a 2-year, $12.75 million deal with that 12.75 representing his guaranteed money. I guess now, sort of in hindsight, you realize, okay, yeah, because he's younger, and thus has quote unquote more upside because he's, you know, about 4 years younger than Carpenter. Means that maybe he deserves to be paid a little bit more. But given that it's more of a short-term deal, I was just surprised to see how much guaranteed money, you know, as if you listen to yesterday's episode, I was thinking like, oh, he'll get like $6 or $7 million guaranteed, and he got like twice that. So his cap hits this year is going to be $4.3 million and roughly about $6.6 million in 2020. We'll see what these guys do. I feel like they're just kind of lateral moves. And I know you guys are like, oh, Aaron, be positive. But, like, I just feel like they're just lateral moves. And I'm just kind of waiting for the Falcons to draft a good young guard that we can be like, yes, you know, that guy might struggle right away. And, you know, I think you can certainly make a very easy argument that Brown and Carpenter are going to give you more in 2019 than a rookie would at that guard position. But I still feel like the Falcons desperately need a guard that they can be like, this is going to be our guy for many years to come. And, you know, I'm skeptical now, given so far this offseason, that that's going to be something of a priority this offseason. It seems likely, given these deals and the way that they're structured, that the Falcons are basically putting themselves in a position once again to punt on the guard position this year and, you know, deal with that next offseason, at least as far as the draft goes. And, you know, it's frustrating, but, you know, I won't lose too much sleep if they balance that out by getting a center and getting a tackle. Again, getting a tackle that is destined to be the next Ryan Schrader, be the next Tyson Clavo, be the next Bob Whitfield. If you go way back in Whitfield's career where he started out as a right tackle before moving to left tackle after Mike Ken's retirement. So, you know, that's my hope. And if the Falcons do that, then I will be able to sleep easy knowing, okay, like they don't need a guard this year. They'll get a guard next year. We got a center. We got our tackle. We're good for now, you know, but until then, you know, I'm a little skeptical of that, but we'll continue to talk about Brown and Carpenter. You know, I'm not willing to be confident that Schweitzer is your center of the future, you know, based off of one preseason game. He didn't really do a whole lot that made me feel great about that potential, but we'll see what happens again with the Falcons. the position, as you can tell, like, you know, like I want this team to have a good offensive line. One of the things I've been thinking about in recent weeks is sort of like the alternate reality where there's like an alternate reality in my eyes where the Falcons several years ago invested in their offensive line and for the better part of the last decade have had one of the best offensive lines in the league because of the investments they made in the offensive line several years ago. And it's frustrating to continue to see them sort of punt at that and not do that and like try to merge those realities for me. So we'll wrap up here. We'll talk a little bit about Tevin Coleman, who's reunited with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, signed a 2-year, $10 million deal with the 49ers today. I was surprised that the 49ers wanted it. I know that was a move that people were basically saying, oh, you know, it's set in stone ever since Kyle Shanahan took that job there. But after they paid a lot of money for Jerick McKinnon last offseason and the reality that, you know, the 49ers have proven over the last couple of years that you don't necessarily need premium talent to make that offense work because, you know, hey, Kyle Shanahan's pretty good at calling plays. I don't know. Like, maybe you guys haven't got the memo. But so I was a little surprised to see that. I thought he would maybe land in Philadelphia after the Jets picked Le'Veon Bell. I thought the Jets were a probable destination, but the Jets wound up going with Le'Veon Bell. And I was a little surprised that Coleman didn't make nearly as much money as I thought he would. I think he made about the same amount that Mark Ingram. And I remember getting into a debate with somebody online, I think someone who covers the Eagles, about sort of whether Ingram or Coleman would cost more. And I was like, oh, Coleman's definitely going to make more money on the open market than Ingram will. And I think they wound up signing for about the same. Maybe even Coleman signed a little bit less. Cause maybe Ingram was like 2 years, $12 million or something like that. So, you know, I wish him the best. I think Coleman never was fully realized in the passing game here in Atlanta, particularly in the Sark era. That was a bone of contention, certainly in 2017, which was discussed frequently on the podcast. Not so much in 2018, but at this point in time, it's, you know, picking on Sark just kind of became tiresome. And it's not as if running more wheel routes and whatnot in drags with Coleman was going to suddenly fix all the Falcons' problems this past season. So it wasn't necessarily a topic of conversation. Does that make you happy, Zach? On the podcast on a weekly basis. But, you know, just because I don't talk about it on the podcast doesn't mean I don't think things, Zach. Unfortunately, I don't think the Falcons really were able to fully maximize Coleman's potential in the passing game. I do think they got the most, you know, probably like 83% out of the maximum potential he had in the running game. Maybe even more than that, 93%. So I don't feel like a lot was left there on the bone. But in the passing game, I felt like, you know, a guy with his skill set probably should have been getting more than two or three targets a game most weeks and probably should have gotten more design plays. And, you know, we saw more of that this past season. We saw more of those wheel routes and whatnot, but it was just few and far between. So it is what it is. I wish Tevin Coleman the best. As I said before, you know, I root for these guys. I watched Tevin Coleman play for the Falcons for 4 years. I like him. You know, I don't think he's perfect by any means, but I do like him as a player. And I feel like he has the potential to be one of the better running backs in the league. And I think at various times in Atlanta, he flashed that potential. It just wasn't consistent enough for him to basically retain a spot here in Atlanta. And so, you know, maybe he'll do that in San Francisco. And we'll see. Well, you know, again, I have more to say about Tevin Coleman, I'm sure, in future episodes. If nothing else to talk about on tomorrow's episode, you know, we can talk about it. And yeah, there you have it, guys. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.